Okay, good morning, everyone. It's Thursday, March 28th, and it is Henry Harris here with another installment of the weekly Emunah Teleforum. And boy, oh boy, do we have exciting topics on the way, in that this is the time where we start turning our attention toward freedom. And I have to say, it is such a blessing to glimpse the possibility of freedom that goes along with an inside-out understanding, an understanding of the inside-out nature of our experience. So I want to elaborate on that. So just to a review, what is this call? So today we're going to be talking about the connection between idolatry and slavery and emunah and freedom, which is 100% one of the themes of Passover and the Haggadah. So that's what we're going to be tuning into. And just a kind of a brief review intro to the conversation. we are talking about a truth, a simple truth that is already in play. And understanding that truth, understanding the nature of that truth, and thereby allowing ourselves to align with that truth, is a wonderful mitzvah. It's a tremendous mitzvah. I'm going to be referring to this as the mitzvah of emunah and the mitzvah of lo yelucha, of not to, to believe in things and powers other than God. And the way that works is that we're having an experience of life, moment to moment to moment. That's just what it means to be a human being, is that you're having an experience of life. You're having a mental, psychological, emotional experience of life that is often not noticeable to you, but yet you're having it anyway. Your moods are moving, you're having experiences and reactions. That's what's going on for every human being. Now, what it looks like at times is that it's the world around you. I spoke to a gentleman just yesterday who is facing a young man with a wonderful sense of responsibility and drive who does not have clarity about his life, his career direction. And his sense is that my lack of clarity, you know, and what he described is that he feels instability. He feels an unstable sense of equilibrium and peace of mind, and it's quite alarming to him. His mind, he becomes calm and peaceful, and then he becomes quite agitated and stressed, and then he's a little more peaceful, and then he's more stressed, and the kind of volatility is itself alarming to him. And if you ask him, well, what's the issue, and he'll say, well, I'm young, but I want to start a family, I want to get married, and I want to have a life, but I don't know what my career path is, and I don't know how to get clarity about my career path, and because I don't know what my career path is and I don't have a clear direction, I can see that I'm in stress and discomfort and whatever. So to the degree that he associates his distress, anxious feelings with knowing something, with not knowing something, with having information, with not having information, with having clarity, with not having clarity, all of that is, of course, even that, not, of course, when you're talking about someone, a person, and how they relate to you, traffic, etc., those are, quote-unquote, outside experiences that don't have power over our, they're not the source of our experience moment to moment. Even something of this quality, of this idea of knowing or not knowing, clarity or not having clarity, even that is a part of this world. The information that I have in my mind is still something that's part of this world, and it's not directly a source of my mental life, my psychological experience. And the proof of this is that he himself acknowledged that he can see that despite nothing changing about the quality or the amount of clarity he has, he can see that he is at times more okay with the lack of clarity and times where he's less okay. So he can kind of, like, he's at a level of understanding that he is open to and curious about that phenomenon, that nothing is changing about the nature of his clarity, and yet his feeling state does move, does change, gets lighter, gets heavier, right? So we're having a conversation about the truth of that, and how what's underlying that truth is the fact that there is this single, simple source behind the entirety of creation, everything. There's no space, iota, molecule, moment that is not continuously being sustained and sourced in the single, simple source, which, of course, is God. And therefore, there cannot be any other source for my experience. There cannot. It doesn't work like that, even though it looks and feels that it could be that that's true. The nature of my knowledge or lack of knowledge, the degree of rapport I have with a child or a lack of degree of rapport, anything. It's only true that it's this moment, that it's the experience of divine energy that the Almighty is making available that is sustaining everything, including my consciousness. That's what we're having a conversation about. And the degree to which we acknowledge and look for that truth, we're involved in an extraordinary and precious commandment. The commandment to know there is a God. The commandment to know that there cannot be any other power than God. To the extent that we are in search of and investigating and curious and open to seeing that truth, that is an extraordinarily worthwhile pursuit, and it is a great accomplishment. Simultaneously, and let me just be clear, in keeping with that truth, it's worth remembering that the pursuit of that understanding, listening to this teleconference or the recording of it, or talking to a person about the idea of the inside out, going to a conference, all of that isn't inherently capable of clarifying the truth about life for you in the sense that it could produce an insight. Like it doesn't, my words or anybody's words for that matter are subject to the same rules that all of reality is subject to, in that my words don't have actual power to arouse within you a new experience. My words, and neither do your words for that matter, have the power to literally create a new psychological experience. It's true, though, that it's a worthwhile effort to learn about and consider and explore and all of that, because that is a mitzvah. That's a mitzvah undertaking, and it's holy. And the good news is that we're kind of designed within that same reality. You know, that same simple reality in which there's only one truth is also at the root of our own being. Right? We can't get away from that truth. We can't get away from that energy, that divine energy that is animating us, that is providing us understanding and the ability to navigate our lives in a way that is completely independent of our personal intelligence, our personal exertions. We're working with a platform that is already aligned with that simple truth, because it is that simple truth. So the simple act of going, of looking over here in this understanding, it's like the game is rigged, that you're going to more accurately experience alignment with that simple truth. That's what I see. That's what I'm experiencing. That's what others are seeing. That's what you're seeing, I'm assuming. Otherwise, you wouldn't be bothering to listen to this call right now. So that's my intro, and now I wanted to speak specifically about a Haggadah Passover theme, and I want to touch on two points. One is that one of the themes in the Haggadah is that the Jewish people began as idolaters. Our origins in the nation of the Jewish people, or started out as a family that started out with individuals, and Avraham Avinu was raised he was born to an idolatrous, an idol worshiper, and he was raised in a world of idolatry, and that's our origins. Our origins are in a worldview of idolatry, and we celebrate. Part of the story of Haggadah, of Passover, is kind of acknowledging how one can move, and one did move. The Jewish people moved from its origins of idolatry to a profound and unique truth of of clarity about the reality of life, about monotheism. And that parallel of moving from idolatry to monotheism, from idolatry to emuna, is completely and wholly parallel to moving from enslavement to freedom. Now, what do I mean by that? And I'm confident that I'm not saying anything that everyone on this call doesn't already know and see for themselves. I'm just going to speak out kind of where and how I've seen this recently, you know? So to the extent that a person does perceive there to be powers other than a single simple source, to the extent that a person does entertain and live in a premise that there are powers in this world, powers such as a spouse's behavior or a child's behavior or a childhood experience or a lack of direction that I might experience in my life right now, as I referred to with that gentleman. To the extent that a person locates his actual experience in this moment in something of this world, then he is by necessity, because he's designed to seek relief, to seek peace of mind, to seek a certain kind of equilibrium, to the extent that he associates something of this world with a lack of peace of mind, with a lack of equilibrium, then he's going to be, by definition, of necessity, involved in addressing and dealing with that thing. He's going to need to deal with his spouse or child, but in a way that doesn't see the truth about the whole experience, right? Like, in other words, my discomfort, my distress is coming from my spouse is not seeing the world the way I do, or not being willing to acquiesce to some request, or my child, etc. To the extent that it looks like that thing is sourcing my experience, then I have to go about trying to change it. But in that moment that I'm feeling compelled and called to address, to judge, to avoid, to manage, to change that which is out there in the world, or what looks to be out there in the world, then I'm going to find myself stuck. You know, what is a slave? A slave is someone who does not have actual power to affect the course of his life, right? A slave is owned. A slave is someone who experiences himself as somewhat, you know, he's like a machine part. You know, he's aware of he has awareness, but he doesn't have license and ability to kind of go and be, he doesn't have choice over kind of the productivity of his life, over the possibility of a meaningful life. He's a machine part. To the degree that you and I are engaged in a world that looks to be, that looks like it needs my intervention, it looks like it requires me to change or manage or avoid, then and fundamentally, kind of deep down, we know that it isn't really available, right? Like that you try so many times to change your kid, at a certain point you kind of sense that it's not going, you know, it's just not going. So you found yourself stuck. You found yourself in an experience of powerlessness. That's what slavery is. Slavery is the experience of, I'm aware of my life, I'm having a conscious experience, but I am powerless to go forward, to go to where I want to go, because things are obstructing me. Things beyond my control are running the show. That's enslavement, and it's not pretty, you know? It's just not pretty. It doesn't feel good. It doesn't bring out, you know, expansiveness and constructiveness and contribution. It looks and feels really yucky, you know? I mean, it makes sense to me why we would associate maror, bitterness, with enslavement. I've experienced stuckness. I've experienced that perception that things and people in the world hold the keys to my psychological well-being. And I have news for you. I don't like it, you know? Now, in the moment, I didn't necessarily understand that, and it just looked absolutely real and compelling to me, and that I felt really trapped. I felt totally trapped in a struggle. And what can I say? The Almighty intervenes, and the Almighty allows us to see something new. And I'm seeing something new in a whole variety of places that is fascinating to me, just absolutely fascinating to me, how I can experience differences of opinion, experience all kinds of circumstances in a way that it doesn't look compelling to me in the way that it once did. So idolatry, the belief in powers other than our Creator, is totally synonymous with with enslavement. And what's interesting is that the clarity that I know that it's not the differences with my spouse or child, etc., that clarity that I know that it's not those things that are actually sourcing my distressing feelings, my upset feelings, or whatever it is, that clarity is valuable independent of whether or not it alleviates the feelings that I'm feeling. It's true whether my feelings are shifting or they're not shifting. And it's a mitzvah. It's an extraordinary mitzvah to know that. And I have additional thought to share about the Haggadah, which is, throughout the Haggadah, we are standing in this kind of dual identity. There is a dual identity being shaped and described throughout the story of the Haggadah. We are, on the one hand, in exile, right? The Jewish people are in exile. Our temple is destroyed. We are dispersed. The nature of God's presence is, to a great degree, concealed in this world, and the Jewish people are there's a lot of beauty, but at the same time we're not doing so great. You know, there's a lot of things that don't look like the Am Hashem, you know, the people of the Creator. So we're in Golis, and yet we're standing on Seder night, experiencing and living a sense of aristocracy. We're leaning, we're drinking four cups of wine, we're celebrating, we're acting free, we're acting the part of a people who have freedom. We acknowledge that the world changed when God took the Jewish people out of Egypt, that He introduced a whole new consciousness to the world. The world became introduced to, and it became available to the world, this profound a consciousness of clarity that was only made available because of His act of taking the Jewish people out of Egypt. It changed the playing field of the whole world. And we have our foot in that door of freedom, even as we have our foot in the door of our exile. Right? We've got a foot in both doors. We hold up the matzah and we say, this matzah is the bread of affliction. This is a symbol of our enslavement. Oh, by the way, it's also the symbol of our freedom. This is the exact food that we ate when God took us out of Egypt, because we didn't have time. We didn't have time to let the dough rise. So we're standing with a foot in both doors. We've got a foot in the door of we are exalted, free human beings. And we've got a foot in the door of we are living in exile. We are reliving an experience of the enslavement because we are in an experience of enslavement. This year here, next year in Jerusalem. It's like a weird kind of dual identity going on that night. We're walking and talking like we're free, and we're walking and talking like we're enslaved. And my understanding of that is because it's true that what is freedom? Freedom is the ability to live in reality, right? You could take a guy who's a, you know, Viktor Frankl writes about his experience being a captive in Auschwitz. I think it was in Auschwitz. I don't know where. I don't remember which camp. He was a prisoner and a member of the death camps held by the Nazis, and he describes having the experience of freedom to live in a world of meaning, to look toward a world of understanding, to look toward an internal world that could never, ever be taken from him, ever. And so on the one hand, he's extraordinarily limited. He doesn't have access to change his circumstances in a direct sense. He can't walk out of the death camp. He can't feed all the famished and dying people that it breaks his heart to look at them. He doesn't have the freedom to act on all the things that he sees and wants. He can't change his experience in a direct sense. On the other hand, he's free to see what's true and meaningful about this moment. And that's how I see my experience. And to me, that is the essence of what this inside-out understanding is pointing me toward. That I don't have freedom to download understanding to my child who's struggling and suffering. I don't know how to impart and change his experience of life in a direct sense. I don't know how to facilitate agreement with my spouse by allowing her to see differently or alternatively changing my state of mind in a direct sense. On the other hand, I still have freedom. I have freedom even in my feeling of discomfort, in my feeling of disgruntlement. I have freedom to see what is true. And that's emunah, that's monotheism, that's inherently freedom. And ultimately, we're still looking to the Creator and saying, look, we celebrate and cherish our freedom. But even as we cherish our freedom, which we have access to, we acknowledge that there is a limit to our freedom because there is a dimension of your presence that's not fully revealed. We don't have the full expression of our soul's desire, the ability our souls could soar so much higher in a world in which your presence is revealed. Our souls could partake of reality and understanding in such a profound way if your presence were revealed and there was a Beis HaMikdash. But, and so in that sense, we're limited. But we're limited because you have not yet revealed. You haven't yet broken those limitations. But even inside of the limitations of our exile, we know where our experience is coming from. And that was what the Jewish people did even in Egypt. As we've discussed many times, the Jewish people living in Egypt were standing in a painful experience, and yet they could understand that it's not because there's a civilization called Egypt and a powerful army and a powerful border control. It's not because of those things that we are here in this experience of enslavement. It's because there is a Creator who is energizing and animating and sustaining this whole phenomenon. That's it. And so to the extent that it's the Creator anyway who's sourcing that experience of limitation, when and how he's ready, that experience of limitation will dissolve. And I'm not going anywhere. I'm not going to camp out in the enslavement. I'm not going to get invested in the enslavement. I'm going to keep my eyes on the truth. And that truth is emunah. That truth is the awareness of lo yelecha. That truth is inherently freedom, even as we stand in an aspect of limitation, that we're in exile. I don't have absolute control over my experience in this moment. And that's not a problem. That is the opportunity of freedom that we are after in exile, and that we can taste any day of the year. And boy, oh boy, on Passover night, wow. I mean, that is a night where the opportunity to look in this direction and to express our gratitude to the Almighty for the understanding that we've seen, and to request His assistance in being revealed a whole new level of understanding of this truth. It can only come from Him. It can only come from Him, and it doesn't come from it doesn't come from listening to these words. It doesn't come from my physical exertions. Of course, it's a mitzvah to do this. It's a beautiful thing to be involved in this conversation. But I don't think that it's these words that produce a divine intervention, a Yetzias Mitzrayim, a going from stuck to unstuck. I don't think it's me that's going to accomplish that. I get to partake of the value and the meaningfulness of this mitzvah, even as I trust and understand where and how things actually get done in this world. Okay, so that's my wrap for the day, and I would be very interested to hear and thoughts from others. Let's see, I'm going to try to do what I've... Okay, we're going to unmute folks. So if you have a thought or a comment or a question, please do share.
Hello?
Yes.
Hi. Hold on. Yes. I wanted to share something that... Tell me how this, if this makes sense. We all talk about how the sun comes up and comes down, but really the sun stays still, and it's the earth that revolves around the sun and moves. The sun is really still the whole time. So our perception is that there's times when there is, we see sun and we don't see sun, but the truth is the sun is there the whole time. It didn't move. We're the ones that moved.
Right. Beautiful.
So it's like, it's really interesting because we know these terms all the time, you know, darkness and light, but that's really just our perception. The sun is really there the whole time. It's
beautiful.
Really just us that move. So it's really
beautiful.
Interesting to see it like that. And it's so fundamental. We just live life like that, but we totally forget about it.
Beautiful. Beautiful. And I'll add to the metaphor, and that is, you know, what is the symbol associated, what is one of the key symbols of the heavens associated with the Jewish people?
The moon.
The moon, right. And the moon is one of the main functions of the moon is to reflect the light of the sun at a time when the sun is not directly visible.
Like a reminder that the sun is still there.
Not only that, that we, the Jewish people, in a world of Hester, in a world in which God has concealed himself, we have the distinct opportunity to be that which projects the light. Like, it's not our light, it's not the moon's light, it's the light of the sun. But the moon, the light of the sun becomes available to the whole world through the moon.
That's
and that
really
is
neat.
The job of every single Jew is to look toward that source of light and understand that that source of light will reflect into this world through me. It's not my light, but it's my purpose to be a vehicle for that light to be reflected and projected in this world.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yes, beautiful. And further, if you consider, you know, how many steps are there? How many steps of the Seder are there? There are 15. And 15 is significant in part because 15 represents the cycle of the moon moving from new to full and then back, right? So 15 is the cycle of the Jewish people going from being fully expressive of the light of God. I'm sorry, being completely unexpressive, right? Not in no way a reflection of the light of God, meaning the sun's presence is absolutely real, as you said. And the moon has the tafkid, the role of reflecting that light. But our experience of being a reflection of that light is going to go from, you know, zero reflection or whatever, very minimal, to a full expression. That's kind of the story of the Jewish people, that we're waxing and waning in terms of the way in which divine understanding is reflected through our history. And that's every individual. You know, I have greater access to being a direct reflection of that light, and I have less, you know, I'm moving in and out of the clarity of that consciousness. But the truth is the truth, unchanging.
That is so neat. That at first I thought that's great, you know, that's our role. We're reflecting the light of Hashem, and it's not our light, we're showing Hashem, especially at a dark time. But here we see it, even us, we're waxing and waning, and we're not always reflecting that light 100%, and that's okay, that's how it is.
Right. That's right. That is absolutely right. And how much freedom is that? How much freedom is that to be able to accept the truth of our human experience? You know, I mean, how that's like... freedom is inclusive of the ability to be in a space of confusion, knowing that it's, you know, not personal, knowing that it's there's a deeper truth behind that as well.
That's absolutely, that's real freedom.
Yeah. That's what I want for my kids. You know, when my kid is struggling, the last thing I want to do is give him a hard time. Why are you struggling? Get over it. You know, it's not so kind. I want to be available and be of help to him, but I certainly don't want to give him a hard time about his having a difficult time. I don't necessarily want to do that to myself either.
It kind of makes me think of, tell me if this makes sense, but I know that you use the muscle of pregnancy a lot. So, you know, at certain times in the pregnancy, the mother can feel the baby kicking. And, you know, it can feel really annoying at times, but the mother would never, like, take it personally or think, like, oh, this, well, Rivka, you know, kind of saw into that, but that's a different story with the kicking with different times. But no mother is going to say, oh, the baby's kicking now. It must mean the person I'm talking to is, like, really mean or something. Like, there's no connection to that. The kicking, it's like no one takes it personally. It's like I think, like, oh, if only, you know, I get this energy, I could realize it's as impersonal as, like, something inside of me that's just kicking, that, you know, I don't make any ramifications of it, and it just is what it is, and it's going to go away, and that's just what it is.
Beautiful. I love that.
Thanks.
Very nice. Who else? Anybody else have a comment or thought or question?
Hello?
I have a comment. Oh,
yeah.
Somebody else could go first.
Yeah, that's okay. I just wanted to add that I'm reminded about also my relationship with other people in this idea, what you're talking about not taking it personally and waxing, the moon waxing and waning. I'm able to like be more okay, let's say when I'm seeking support, right, in a certain area of my life, and if a certain sibling is just not able to do it for me, like I used to be like frustrated, like why can't she be more supportive? And why is she sometimes acting the opposite of supportive? Like what? I just couldn't get it, and then I'll feel very angry towards her. But this was just reminding me that I just find myself not being, like, being just me, being more understanding, because this is what she's seeing now. She's not getting the thoughts about being supportive in a way that I want it. So it's not her fault. I'll get support in a different way.
Very nice. And you know what? Even the ability to have even that perception is itself an indication of your understanding. Right? Meaning you the fact that you could even consider that is itself an experience of understanding, a gift that you have the ability to glimpse something impersonal.
Yeah.
You don't have the ability to turn that button on. You know, as far as I know, you know, you don't have the ability to go, let's see the impersonal nature of her response, you know, to me.
Right.
I don't know how to turn that button on, but when you see it, you can acknowledge, oh, look at that. I'm being shown something right now, you know?
Yeah. I'm able to just see her for who she is right now instead of, like you said, getting all personal about it. And it's just
wonderful. Yes, you can see the impersonal quality of her behavior, of what's behind her, that she's doing the best she knows to do and taking care of herself and others in the way that it makes, you know, it just looks that way to her, and be grateful that you are glimpsing something other than your own hurt.
Yeah.
Very nice. Anyone else?
I had a comment.
Yeah, please.
It's something that occurred to me as everybody was talking. So I was reading the book on Rabbi Eliashev. They have, his book of his life. And it's one of the things that he said, he was talking to a man that I think the man had cancer and he was going through the chemo and he was just tired. You know, he was in pain all the time. He was tired. So he said to the rabbi, he said, like, I'm tired and I'm really like, I'm done. You know, like he was just almost ready to die. Like he was just exhausted already.
Yeah.
So the rabbi said to him, you know, there's a pasuk in the Torah which says, I place before you good and evil. And then it says, choose life. They said, why does Hashem have to tell us to choose life? Isn't it obvious? Like, wouldn't we always choose life? They said, no, there are times in your life where you wouldn't choose life because you're tired and you're down and you're just like, you know, just enough already. Mm. So he said, no, we always have to really, even when we're down and we don't want to choose life, we really have to still choose life. And it hit me because when I was reading it, I was just like, you know what, it's funny because even like this, what we're always talking about, the choice is to just be in the moment, even if the moment is not my favorite moment, it's really a choosing life in that point to say,
beautiful.
You know what, Hashem, this is where you put me. And
beautiful.
Even though my body is tired and even my mind is tired, but I still, like he said, why Hashem has to give us a commandment to choose life? Because we might forget. We may not realize in this moment to choose life because it's too hard.
Yes.
But so what occurred to me was like, wow, like I never thought of it like that. So I just wanted to share it because I felt like it really came out with the Passover theme of like, even when we don't sometimes want to choose life, we have to do it anyway. And, you know, there is such a thing as, like you were saying, we're not in control of the circumstances and we're not even in control of how we feel about the circumstances. But in that sense, Hashem says, but you still are in control to at least choose life.
Yes.
And however that would work.
Beautiful.
Does that make sense?
Yes, beautiful, beautiful. I think that's very much what Viktor Frankl saw in the Holocaust, you know? I mean, that, you know, like, what do we know? What do I know already about difficulty? You know, like, I certainly have had my experience of difficulty and struggle, but, you know, that it's so powerful that a person could be. And it's just a reminder of that being the human spirit, that we have that capacity of looking to the truth in this moment is itself meaning. It's that itself is freedom. And I don't need any control over the circumstances of my life. I don't need any control over this, including the circumstances of my own mood. I don't need any control, and yet I still have the freedom to acknowledge the truth, to acknowledge what the value of life in this moment, because it's coming from a single source called God. And that to me is the meaning of the expression, Hakol b'yidei shemayim, everything is in the hands of heaven, chutz miyira shemayim. There is nothing that is not in the direct control of God, except this beautiful gift of miraculous choice that I can acknowledge that, you know, that's Hakol v'yidei shemayim chutz v'yira shemayim. And then simultaneously, as we've certainly touched on, the beginning of all wisdom, Reishis Chochma Yiras Hashem, that is the foundation of all wisdom. All wisdom will come only on the heels of that ability to see that truth. You know, how fortunate are we? How fortunate are we that we're interested, that we've been given a glimpse of this inner world, that we have this potential for freedom that is completely and totally unattached to the world that we are not in control over. It's just, you know, it's wow.
You know, I heard a story about Rabashkin when he was in jail. They said that when they were releasing him, usually when people get released, they have to give them like a intro into getting back into society type of thing. So they said that the person in charge of that said he didn't need that because he was never in jail. In his mind, he just never was there. And
wow.
They said he just went out. Yeah.
Wow.
He just went out. I heard that story. I assume it's true because I heard it on class.
Wow.
But they said he was never in jail.
Beautiful. I mean, on a certain level, that to me is, to you know, when I was speaking to that idea of this dual identity on Seder night, we've got our foot in the door of exile, and we have our foot in the door of this exalted sense of freedom. That's what Viktor Frankl was experiencing. He was in this complete and total shutdown circumstance, and yet lived a rich and inner lived inside of a rich inner world.
But is that a gift to certain people? Because, like, I can't do that. You know what I'm saying? Like, I could choose life, but it doesn't mean he was able. In other words, I always wonder, is that a gift from Hashem that he gave him the ability to not be in jail? Because, you know, we would all kind of choose not to be in jail and online, but not everybody can accomplish that. You know what I'm saying? So I wonder sometimes, like, how does, again, it's just back to how does it work?
Mm-hmm.
And it could be he wasn't not in jail every minute of the day. It could be overall he was fine, but he had his moments. You know, that I don't
well,
want
yeah,
to
I would assume.
Take that away. You know what I'm
yeah.
saying? He must have had some down moments. But I still wonder, like, because to me, everything's a gift from Hashem. I just see that the absolute control that Hashem has, that I just see it when you have that good moment, you could say, and bad moment, we'll say, well, it's all a gift. I don't want to say the bad moment's not a gift. But in other words, there is something to, you know, sometimes I see, I'll get an insight, and it really took away certain thoughts that I really couldn't, you know, I wasn't yet allowed to get rid of those thoughts, even if I knew their thought, but they still come with a certain feeling, you know, so I don't know.
You know, if I'm hearing your question, it sounds a little bit like you're asking about kind of, you know, God's role, and yet there still being the possibility of, you know, choice, you know, if God
I
is really...
I think it just always, yeah, it always comes into where, and we can't answer this question, maybe you could, but like, where we don't know the point of free will, so we do our best.
Yeah, no, it's the whole, the idea of free will is a bit of a mystery. If you really take to its logical conclusions the truth of Einod Milvado,
right.
it's a miraculous mystery that somehow I'm sitting here talking to you, experiencing myself as a distinct and conscious being. That's miraculous, you know? That is miraculous that I'm not saying I'm, like, experiencing that with the full-bodied, you know, consciousness of that,
right,
but
right.
I get that on a logic, you know, concept level, it's the free will thing that doesn't make a lot of sense. Yet, I experience, I do have a taste in experience. I've touched, and I continue to touch that perception of choice as it unfolds in the course of my day. You know, I know that the Torah promises me that I have this choice. What we're learning about, which is so helpful to me, it's so helpful to me, is that the parameters of my choice happens to be a lot simpler and smaller than what I might have thought at an earlier time in my life.
Right, exactly.
And it's amazing to me how well-suited human beings are with the smaller, more accurate understanding of our job, and how not well suited we are to an inaccurate and inflated idea of our job. You know, at the end of the day, my job is, you know, begins with acknowledging what's true about this moment, acknowledging what's true at all times, and that the power of that, the truth of that, that I can accept that moment without the need to run or judge or go anywhere, is, of course, what then allows me to be available for new interventions, new revelations. And that's what we've all experienced. We've experienced times in our life where we went from point A to point B, where a door became illuminated to us, and it was like, oh, right, I'll go there. And we did, and our lives changed. But it wasn't that we were the ones who illuminated the door. We were, whatever we were doing, who knows? I don't know how to judge, you know, precisely my contribution. But I can see that the less I'm involved in trying to do a job that's not mine, the more I tend to notice good doors. And those doors really help. And I didn't, and they're not complicated. So, yeah, that's a little thought about, you know, free will. And it's the mysterious yet the mysteriousness, yet at the same time the necessity, the obviousness of that gift being in our lives.
Could I ask about that a little bit?
Yeah.
Hi.
Hi.
So what you just said, like, I really loved it, like when you said it's a lot simpler than we think.
Yeah.
And we tend to mistakenly assume a much larger job, which is really not our job.
Yep.
You know, so just to make sure I understand correctly, so the smaller job is really just recognizing in the moment that I'm getting my experience from Hashem, and Hashem is in charge, and Hashem really knows the answer. And the larger job is thinking in the moment, oh, I can fix this if only I, like, analyze it to death, and I need to find a solution, and just, like, going in circles and racing in circles, right?
That's a wonderful description of what looked like my job for a long time, and truth be told, still looks like my job at times.
Well, in that case, I have a question, because I have been noticing lately, especially like in the last, few days, we've been through something that's kind of very counterintuitive and difficult, and causes a lot of, you know, insecure thinking and emotional upheaval. And even as I say that, I realize it's not it that causes it, it's Hashem that causes it.
Okay.
But I've noticed a few times in the last few days that I'm just like trying so hard. And only a few times every day I remember, like I'm gifted with a realization, oh, shoot, I forgot it again. I just have to ask Hashem to help. Like, I forgot that, like, you know how Adam didn't have any vegetables growing and Hashem was waiting for him to pray for rain?
Yep.
Like, he created a lack, like how you said. So I keep forgetting about, like, why there's a lack. Like, I'm surrounded by lacks all around me, and I'm running around trying to make the plants grow, you know, like crazy. But they're not growing, and then I'm like, oh, shoot, I forgot. Oh, right. And it happened maybe, like, in the last few days, it happened, like, maybe 2-3 times a day. And the rest of the day, I'm so entrenched in this kind of rat race, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So here's my question. It doesn't look like I choose through my free will to remember about Hashem. I don't. I forget. And then all of a sudden, Hashem is kind of like, oh, my gosh, she's pathetic. Let me remind her. And then, like it's sort of like, oh, shoot, sorry, I forgot. Oh, of course, please help me. You know, help me. Then he helps. I immediately forget, or I immediately ascribe what he helped me to circumstances. Oh, I did this right. Oh, great. Oh, he did that right, you know?
Yeah.
And then I'm back in this, you know, hamster wheel. And so my question is, like, I don't feel like I'm choosing anything ever. It's like I'm reminded, and the thought about Hashem also is not coming from me. Like, the thought, like, sweetie, you forgot to pray to Hashem. You forgot that Hashem is creating all of this. You forgot this is a game. You got too kind of, like, caught up. When I get these reminders maybe twice or three times a day or whatever, uh-huh, I don't feel like I'm doing it. So my question is, where is this free will? I feel like there is none. Because when I'm reminded that, I would never choose to say, no, it's not Hashem. Do you know what I mean?
Interesting.
Do you hear what I'm saying, though?
I think so. It doesn't seem to you, like, obviously once you get the reminder, oh, right, it's from Hashem, what are you going to do? You're going to turn your back on it? That's ridiculous. That's not like a choice.
Yeah. And then I forget, and I also feel like I'm not doing the forgetting. I can't help it.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, I pray, I say, please remind me, please, and I feel like he's listening to me because he is reminding me. But I feel like I'm not controlling how often I'm reminded.
Okay, but that very act of choice to pray is itself, that's not a choice?
You think so? It's a choice?
I don't know. You tell me.
Lately, I feel like I have no choice whatsoever because I feel like everything I do, I'm compelled. Like, you know the word compelled?
Yeah.
Like, I feel like everything I do now in my life, I've been noticing it a lot because I used to think everything I do is my choice. That's what I used to think before Three Principles, you know, before Enyo, before learning with you. I used to think everything is my choice. What do you mean? Of course, nobody can make me do anything. But now I feel the opposite. I feel like I'm constantly, like, sometimes I want to, like, I was talking to Melissa and how she said, like, sometimes we want to say something and we just can't get the words out. Or the other way around, I don't want to say something and within seconds I blurted it out. And I'm like, shoot, why did I do that? But, like, it's almost, do you know what I'm saying? I feel like I'm constantly just compelled. And the only thing I've been doing is kind of letting go a little bit and thinking, okay, well, I'll just try and just see where I'm taken. You know, kind of like a log that's being carried by a river. You know what I mean?
Oh.
You know
what I mean? I like that metaphor.
I mean, I want to be careful. I don't want to say now, oh, my gosh, now I'm going to do whatever the heck I want, and I don't care because it's not my choice. I don't want to say that. I want to pray and ask that, please make me do the right things. Please make me do nice things. Please help me see nice things. You know, please send me nice thoughts, you know.
Right, right.
So, but I just, you know, I'm sorry, I don't see where the free will is anymore.
That's so interesting. That is such an interesting observation you're pointing to. I really like the way you describe it. Let's see. Right, you're experiencing a lot of compelling feelings, kind of like you're in this reactive zone. Yet it's obvious that that's not your whole day, right? It's obviously the case that you're not living completely and exclusively in reactivity. And even as you're reacting, and what's fascinating is, if I'm not mistaken, even as you're reacting, you're kind of you're like watching it. There's a part of you that's a little bit watching it, no?
For sure, when I'm gifted with the watching. Sometimes I'm not.
Okay. Look, you know
what I mean?
look,
and I don't get to choose when I'm watching.
Yeah. Look, I just go back, you know, I go back to the metaphor that I keep, you know, I just have such satisfaction from this metaphor of, you know, of the birth process. You know, like, you're guaranteed to experience your life in a series of contractions that you can watch them, right? You're in them, right? You're in the contraction. It's like you feel the pain. You feel your lack of control over the pain. You didn't initiate the beginning of it, and you're not sure when it's going to stop. Not only are you not sure when it's going to stop the individual contraction, you don't know when the series of contractions are going to stop and thereby lead to a birth. You don't know. And yet, you can sense and experience that you're having a force moving through you.
And I've also noticed recently that the less I care, like sometimes I just notice that I sort of don't care so much about the level of pain, the duration of pain, when they're going to end, you know? Just sometimes I'm just gifted with kind of like not obsessing about the details so much.
Mm.
And then I'm amazed. Like, I used to think I have to pray to death to get something right, you know? And now sometimes I notice, oh, it could be the opposite. It's almost like as long as I'm not so hung up on the details, on the illusion, on the factors that I can touch, it's almost like it's easier. And they sort of get resolved by themselves.
Beautiful.
And there's beyond the power that does it, you know?
Yes, yes, that's right. You're touching a trusting feeling. You're touching a sense that there really is a power independent of you that is present, independent of your prayers, present and involved and engaged and intervening, independent of your... You're not, you know, it's not. It's like, in no way do I mean to diminish the power of our prayer, but it's, you know, our prayer is our opportunity. It's not because it's like, we get to, you know, we get to get job, we get to make sure God is on duty, you know, like, get going, God,
yeah.
you know, like, God is on duty, and you're describing a moments of trust and perception of that. That's a gift. That's what you have an opportunity, that each of us has an opportunity to behold, that there are places and moments in our lives where we literally go from point A to point B. There was a profound intervention that there's no way for us to account for it through our, you know, through anything. And yet it's true. That's what the Exodus is. The Exodus is the story of the Jewish people being completely powerless in a direct sense to extract themselves. And yet, nonetheless, despite our powerlessness, despite our lack of merit, God said, I'm here. I'm completely oriented toward you, and I'm intervening in your life, you know, and your life is going to look and feel completely different, and there is no other way that your life could look and feel totally different. There's only one way that it looks, that it could work, that it could work. So we kind of like start getting less enamored with our sweat and hustle, you know. The sweat and hustle of mitzvahs is a precious thing, but not because it's got, you know, real results attached to it. It's precious because we get to do things that are the commandments of the Creator, you know. That's like, it's such an incredible thing. But the actual outcome is really kind of on, it's good, you know. It's all good.
That's great news.
It is such good news. And you know what? We don't get tired of revisiting and being awake, you know, re-seeing that good news. You know, we don't get tired of it. That's why that's why our lives feel the way they do, you know. This is great. This is great. I'm so happy to hear that you're sensing and seeing that trust. You're seeing those moments of gifts, of how things are fine, completely independent of what you're taking on. And there's gratitude. You know, by the way, one there's a reason why one of the main themes of the night of Passover is gratitude. Gratitude to me is the telling, is kind of admitting to the truth of there being something, you know. Gratitude is when you acknowledge the source of some benefit in your life, where you acknowledge that someone intervened in your life that you didn't do it, someone else did it, you know. Gaining gratitude is living in that perception of like, right, look at how this is possible, and yet I didn't do it. Look how this is possible, and I didn't do it. I had that moment of clarity 10 weeks ago when I saw something that I'd never seen before. I don't see it in the moment, but it was true. It was real. It's testifying to the presence of a power. You know, gratitude is like, to me, a lifeline. You know, gratitude is the ability to sense that something can come from nowhere. All right, well, I'm looking at the time, and I see that we're up to 11 o'clock, so I thank you for joining, and it is such a wonderful part of my week to partake of these conversations and the opportunity to share, and I look forward to hearing from you if you have thoughts or comments, and I wish everybody a great week and a wonderful Shabbos.